break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. John Kerry declared victory in the Democratic presidential race Tuesday and formally opened the general election campaign with an assault on George W. Bush's credibility. With a win in Illinois, Kerry acknowledged he had enough delegates to July's nominating convention to claim the right to challenge Bush in November, a formality given that most delegate counters put him over the top last week. Accused by the White House in a new television ad airing in West Virginia of voting against funds for troops in Iraq, Kerry struck back by questioning Bush's credibility and saying he was blaming others for his own administration's failures. Kerry said Bush had squandered a budget surplus, misrepresented the cost of a Medicare bill, and misled Americans about the threat from weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, while pointing blame at former President Bill Clinton, Saddam Hussein, or the September 11th attacks. Madrid police believe six Moroccans were behind last week's train bombings amid allegations that outgoing Prime Minister José María Aznar had tried to orchestrate a cover-up. The El País newspaper said police had identified six Moroccan citizens as the perpetrators. Aznar's party blamed the atrocity on armed Basque separatist group ETA, despite evidence to the contrary, triggering accusations that it was covering up an Al-Qaeda link for electoral ends. A newspaper executive said Aznar had personally telephoned various media bosses on the day of the attacks to insist ETA was to blame. A federal judge has dismissed a lawsuit accusing two former advisors to Bill Clinton of defaming Jennifer Flowers when they suggested that the audio tapes she used to try to prove she and Clinton had an affair had been doctored. U.S. District Judge Philip M. Proe ruled that no reasonable jury could find clear and convincing evidence that James Carville and George Stephanopoulos acted with malice. The Flowers lawsuit sought unspecified punitive and compensatory damages. It was filed on her behalf in 1999 by Judicial Watch, a conservative Washington public interest group. President Tom Fitton said Tuesday the group may appeal. More news after this.
I'm Oscar Davis. You may have a serious eye condition and not even know it. Vision loss is not a normal part of aging. Some vision changes are normal. Some are due to eye disease. Do you know the difference? Open your eyes to the facts. To get more information about vision and aging, or find out about what help is available if you're having vision problems, call Lighthouse International at 1-800-829-0500 or visit www.lighthouse.org.
A Houston woman gave birth Monday to two sets of identical twins, something their doctor said is only likely to happen in about 1 in 11 million pregnancies. Cheryl McGowan gave birth by cesarean section to Jacob, Jacoby, Jason, and Justin. The twins weighed from 2 pounds 5 ounces to 3 pounds 4 ounces. The babies were born during their mother's 30th week of pregnancy. For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
If you think corporate world can't get any more conniving, you've not figured on Monsanto. This is the biotech outfit that's trying to profit by putting its artificial growth hormones into our milk supply. Since consumers overwhelmingly reject this adulteration, Monsanto lobbyists got our government to let this milk be marketed with no labeling of the adulteration, so we milk buyers won't know what we're getting. The good news is that several dairies have responded by declaring on their milk cartons, "No artificial growth hormones used." The bad news is that Monsanto greedheads have unleashed packs of their attack dog lawyers to sue several of these dairies, claiming that these no artificial hormones labels are, get this, false and misleading, because they might cause you and me to think that natural milk is better for us than milk with Monsanto's additive. In the first place, I do think that. But secondly, the dairies are not making any such health claim. They're merely informing us that the corporate additive is not in their milk. What's false or misleading about that? Nothing. But by simply filing these frivolous lawsuits, Monsanto can intimidate the dairies into changing their labels. It recently succeeded with this bullying tactic against Oakhurst Dairy in Maine. Monsanto was prepared to spend $250,000 or more just on lawyers to squeeze Oakhurst. How's a small dairy going to match that? After fighting for several months, Oakhurst has settled out of court, agreeing to alter its label. Even though Maine public opinion was solidly behind Oakhurst, and even though legal analysts say Monsanto's legal case was silly putty. This is Jim Hightower saying, Oakhurst is the third small dairy that this biotech Goliath's money has beaten down, and others are targeted. For the purity of our milk, marketplace, and judicial system, we consumers need to stand against the bully. Call the Organic Consumers Association, 218-226-4164.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends. Happy St. Patrick's Day to our patriots from coast to coast and lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite system, streaming around the world on the internet from radiopower.org. Happy Wednesday the 17th to you. It's in the 5th century, the famous Irish saint, St. Patrick, drove the snakes from Ireland and replaced them with Christianity. And there are some who are suggesting that, well, given that it was a year ago today that George Bush made his get-out-of-Dodge speech, to Saddam Hussein, interesting timing, that it's now time for us to drive our snakes out of office, as it were. The DNC released a limerick for the day. It's great. There also was a Yank from Connecticut who utterly lacked any etiquette. He claimed Texas blood, threw the truth in the mud. Think his word is his bond, don't bet on it. Yeah, well said. Will the conservative attempts, and in particular, of course, those being run by the Bush administration, but just even broadly, I mean, there's this whole, there really is a debate, a battle in some ways, you could say, about what kind of nation America is going to be. What, you know, are we going to return to the golden era of the middle class of America, the period from the 1940s to the early 1980s? When one person working one good job could actually raise a family, put kids through school, pay for health care, and even save enough for retirement or have a pension. Are we going to go back to that? Or, as Mr. Greenspan has suggested, are we going to slash Social Security? As many, many conservatives have suggested, are we going to do away with Medicare? We've already started the unraveling of it. The absolute full press assault on organized labor that started with the Reagan administration in the 1980s, most visibly with his busting PATCO, the Professional Air Traffic Controllers Association, the Air Traffic Controllers Union. But you know, it was just emblematic of the whole thing. The conservative worldview, the conservative idea being that it's just fine for corporations or for capital, let's say, for wealth, to aggregate itself, to form unions, to combine itself, to combine with other wealth to gain greater and greater economic power. And in fact, in defiance of the clear and explicit writings of the founders of this country and laws in the United States that were on the books right up through in many cases right up through the 1950s and 60s and 80s, but certainly up until the 1880s when the charter-mongering era began and the Gilded Age, in open defiance of laws that said that when corporate power or when the power of wealth becomes so great that it begins to corrupt the political process, that's an assault on democracy that we won't tolerate. Are we going to go back to the conservative vision that says, you know, the conservative vision of the McKinley era that says it's okay for wealth to aggregate, it's okay for corporations to be powerful, and because I'm not saying that it's not okay for people to form corporations and to make money. I'm all in favor of that. What I am suggesting is that when the power of such organizations begins to bleed into the political realm, democracy is at risk. And at the same time, they're saying, and labor, by the way, doesn't have the right to organize. Workers should not have that right. You know, you got to bust up these unions. The whole problem with the National Education Association, a bunch of terrorists. I mean, the conservative vision of America is, let's go back to the era of Charles Dickens, where you've got a very small, very wealthy class, a very small, doing okay kind of middle class, mercantilist class, the owners of a few small businesses, although increasingly they're being wiped out by the Walmarts of the world. And you've got a very large class of what we today call the working poor, what used to be called serfs. This is a very stable form of governance that we have had in the world for thousands of years. It's called feudalism. And Edmund Burke, the father of modern economic thought, praised it. As Russell Kirk in his 1953 book, The Conservative Mind, which was the inspiration for Barry Goldwater. Goldwater cites it in his book, With No Apologies, his autobiography, the inspiration for William F. Buckley. As Russell Kirk points out, society should have orders and classes. The conservative world will be very clear. You know, some are born to lead, some are born to follow, some are born to wealth, and everybody else is born to work. And we saw this in this recent tax law that George Bush passed, where if you earn your living by sitting by the pool collecting your dividend checks, you only pay a 15% income tax and you pay no payroll tax at all. But if you earn your living working at the 7-Eleven or digging ditches or, you know, anything, you know, working on an assembly line, working as a bureaucrat, something, whatever, if you earn your living by the sweat of your brow or the working of your mind, then you must pay those payroll taxes, and your top income tax rate will be considerably higher than 15%. And you know, it's becoming so apparent. Will the conservative attempts to dismantle the American middle class, begun under Ronald Reagan, and so far quite successful, by the way? We have seen a steady erosion in the purchasing power, the income ability of the middle class ever since Reagan came into office. Will the conservative attempts to dismantle the American middle class undo George Bush in November? Is it going to happen? Alan Greenspan's taking a lot of heat right now, and as is George Bush, about these kinds of issues. I mean, you've got George Bush saying the solution to the whole problem is tax cuts for the rich, right?
With a robust package of at least $550 billion and across-the-board tax relief, we will help create more than 1 million new jobs.
Yeah. You know, I'm a businessman. I've owned businesses. And every business that I've started and run through the years, over the last 30 years, I started because I saw a market opportunity, not because somebody gave me a tax cut. I mean, it's really simple. You see an opportunity out there in the marketplace. You say, hey, I can make some money doing this. And you know, of course, Bush has never done that. I mean, you know, all of the four businesses that he's been involved with, one financed by the Bin Laden family and the other three by other friends of his father's. Anyway, whole nother rant. I don't want to get too partisan here. All right, there's no point in it, frankly. The Fed has left the interest rates at 1%. Alan Greenspan. We're going to leave it at 1%. And I just want to share with you, we played part of this back in July, I think, when it first happened. And I've had several people over the last month or two say, you know, I want to hear that Bernie clip again. I want so-and-so to get it. I want to record it. I want to get it on your archives. This is Bernie Sanders questioning Alan Greenspan in hearings before the United States House of Representatives about his thinking on how things should be.
Mr. Greenspan, I have long been concerned that you are way out of touch with the needs of the middle class and working families of our country, that you see your major function in your position as the need to represent the wealthy and large corporations. And I must tell you that your testimony today only confirms all of my suspicions. And I urge you, and I mean this seriously, because you're an honest person. I think you just don't know what's going on in the real world. And I would urge you, come with me to Vermont. Meet real people. The country clubs and the cocktail parties are not real America. The millionaires and billionaires are the exception to the rule. You talk about an improving economy while we have lost 3 million private sector jobs in the last 2 years. Long-term unemployment has more than tripled. Unemployment is higher than it has been since 1994. We have a $4 trillion national debt. 1.4 million Americans have lost their health insurance. Millions of seniors can't afford prescription drugs. Middle-class families can't send their kids to college because they don't have the money to do that. Bankruptcy cases have increased by a record-breaking 23%. Business investment is at its lowest level in more than 50 years. CEOs make more than 500 times of what their workers make. The middle class is shrinking. We have the greatest gap between the rich and the poor of any industrialized nation, and this is an economy that is improving. I hate to see what would happen if our economy was sinking.
See, right here, Bernie has really put his finger on it. There is a recovery for the very wealthy in America. If you earn your income sitting around the pool waiting for your dividend checks, you are doing very well right now. And there was a great article that I think I shared with you a couple of weeks ago from the New York Times where we talked about where the New York Times talked about how there was this boom going on in Tiffany's and Saks Fifth Avenue. You know, the high end merchants are just they're just having a great time, and the extreme low end merchant, Walmart, is doing really well. But everybody in the middle is just going down the tubes, and it's very, very, very clear that the middle class is having a very, very difficult time right now. Two income family spendings. If you compare right now with the 1950s and 1960s, the golden age of the American middle class, when actually what you might call liberal economic policies were being promoted, our spending on appliances is down 44%. Our spending on clothes is down 21%. Our spending on food is down 21%. Two-income family income is only 75% higher than one-income family back in the 50s and the 60s. So two people together are not earning twice as much as we used to earn. Bankruptcies are up over 300% since the 1950s and 1960s. We have more people declaring bankruptcies in absolute numbers now than we did during the Great Depression. 1.6 million people a year filing for bankruptcy. 9 million people a year going into financial counseling, trying to avoid bankruptcies. The main cause, 50% of the time, the main cause having to do with the loss of health care. I'm going to get back to Bernie here. And just this whole issue of, is this going to be the thing that brings down George Bush in November? Or is it going to be something else? We'll see. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Kids across America are digging deep. President Bush's tax cuts mean big tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires. Paying for them won't be easy, but these kids are ready to do their part. In 2003 alone, George Bush put every child in America $7,400 into debt. To these children, we have one thing to say.
Thanks, kids.
Easily paid for by billionaires.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
A recent report prepared by the Democratic staff of the U.S. House Education and Workforce Committee hangs the most solid number yet on the hidden costs of shopping at Walmart. The committee figures each Walmart store with a staff of 200 or more puts a $420,750 burden on local federal taxpayers for social services costs. These would include housing, education, energy, and tax benefits awarded to workers like those at Walmart who are not paid a living wage and for the most part do not have health insurance.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he a guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought...
The best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman, your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio. The article, today's New York Times, an article by Edmund L. Andrews, citing low hiring Fed leaves rates alone. Here's this just classic sentence. Federal Reserve officials had also made clear that they were worried and puzzled about the stubbornly high level of unemployment. Let me share another minute of Bernie with you, and then we got a caller here we'll get to.
Now, today you may not have known this. I suspect that you don't.
Talking to Greenspan.
But you have insulted tens of millions of American workers. You have defended over the years, among other things, the abolition of the minimum wage, one of your policies, and giving huge tax breaks to billionaires. But today you reached a new low, I think, by suggesting that manufacturing in America doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where the product is produced. We lost 2 million manufacturing jobs in the last 2 years alone, 10% of our workforce. Walmart has replaced General Motors as the major employer in America, paying people starvation wages rather than living wages, and all of that does not matter to you. Doesn't matter if it's produced in China, where workers are making 30 cents an hour, or produced in Vermont, where workers can make 20 bucks an hour. It doesn't matter. You have told the American people that you support a trade policy which is selling them out, only working for the CEOs who can take our plants to China, Mexico, and India. You insulted Mr. Castle. Mr. Castle, a few moments ago, a good Republican, told you that we're seeing not only the decline of manufacturing jobs, but white-collar information technology jobs. Forrester Research says that over the next 15 years, 3.3 million U.S. service industry jobs and $136 billion in wages will move offshore to India, Russia, China, and the Philippines. Does any of this matter to you? Do you give one whit of concern to the middle class and working families of this country? That's my question.
Ah, that's the question. Okay, we'll get to Mr. Greenspan's answer in a few moments. I don't know if you noticed, but right now, Colin Powell is over in India saying, we're not going to do anything about the outsourcing of American jobs. Anyhow, let's go to a call here, 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to be on the Tom Hartman radio program, 1-866, one of those newfangled toll-free numbers, 889-8894, 27 minutes past the hour. And Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma is on the line. Hey, Glenn, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. I was watching The Daily Show last night, and John Stossel was being interviewed. You've talked about John Stossel's attitudes before, and his pushing his new "Give Me a Break" book.
Yeah.
And he brought up the fact that 40% of America's income production is now going to government. I guess he means the tax money collected is 40% going to government, and then. John Stossel replied with, well, what are you going to do, cut Medicare, cut Social Security? And he went through the social programs. But he left out the biggest expense of all, I think, which is
defense.
Military, or
yeah.
It's close to the biggest one.
Yeah.
And you can't talk about getting our deficit down and getting more tax breaks to the majority of people without addressing the fact that we're trying to spread our military all over the world and building multi-billion-dollar weapon systems that are, for the most part, are useless now.
It's
crazy.
And there's some absolutely mind-bogglingly huge systems that went to some of the largest donors to Reagan's. I mean, Don Rumsfeld used to be a lobbyist for Star Wars.
Right.
I mean, it was a trillion-dollar transfer of wealth, $160 billion a year of the interest on the national debt that you and I are paying right now in our taxes is for interest on the money that Ronald Reagan borrowed from us so that he could pay for Star Wars programs that never happened and didn't work. It's mind-boggling. Good point, Glenn. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Tom Hartman with you. 29 minutes past the hour. I'll be right back.
On December 10th, the Bush administration joined 45 states, warning Americans not to eat fish with high mercury levels that can cause birth defects and learning disabilities. But days later, the administration said it wanted to give power plants permission to shower more mercury onto our lakes and streams for 10 years longer than the law allows. Sound fishy? Mr. President, there's a better way to strengthen the State of the Union. Protect us, not the polluters who contributed to your campaign. Enforce the Clean Air Act.
pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A United Nations report on racism suggests Canada should pay reparations to Chinese migrant workers brought into the country between the late 19th and early 20th century. Canada charged a head tax on Chinese who arrived between 1885 and 1923. They each paid between $50 and $500 to be allowed in. The UN report suggests the government collected up to $23 million from the scheme, which it recommends be repaid. Canada's Minister for Multiculturalism has rejected the report.
The first ever labor contract for Walt Disney part-time workers will be put to a vote next week. The tentative deal was negotiated by the Service Trades Council, representing 6,100 part-time Disney workers, ranging from hotel employees to costume characters. The tentative agreement raises wages each year through 2007, bumping starting pay from $6.35 to $6.70 per hour, provides grievance procedures, allows workers greater job flexibility, and recognizes seniority rights. However, the pay raise still leaves some workers under the federal poverty level.
Being a journalist in Iraq just got a lot tougher. This month, the U.S. Occupying Authority implemented a requirement that all journalists working in Iraq be registered by and accredited with the military. A crew with the Korea Broadcasting System found out about the new rules the hard way last week when they were detained by U.S. troops and held for several hours, even after the Korean consulate vouched for their professional status. The International Federation of Journalists accuses the U.S. of attempting to intimidate and control journalists in Iraq, which hampers their ability to learn an accurate picture about the occupation and reconstruction effort. No comment from the U.S. military.
Popcorn lung is now a disease officially recognized by the courts. 32-year-old Eric Peoples contracted lung disease after working in a Missouri microwave popcorn factory for only a year and a half. Peoples sued, claiming artificial butter flavoring was to blame for his illness, and this week a Missouri jury agreed, awarding him $18 million. International Flavors and Fragrances Incorporated says its products pose no danger to popcorn consumers, though the company now issues respirators to its employees.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Of all the workers in the federal government, which have the most dangerous jobs? If you use OSHA injury rates as your yardstick, the answer would have to be airport screeners with the Transportation Security Administration. Last year, 19.4% of all screeners suffered some sort of mishap at the airport. Most common were strained muscles from lifting baggage. That on-the-job injury rate is more than three times the average for the entire federal workforce.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Richard Corey owns one half of this whole town, with political connections to spread his wealth around. Born into society, a banker's only child, he had everything a man could want.
Yes, it's sort of the story of George W. Bush, isn't it? Anyhow, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 26 minutes before the hour. The Federal Reserve left short-term interest rates unchanged at 1% yesterday. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you, by the way. Day 244 since the outing of Joe Wilson. Joe Wilson's wife, actually, Valerie Plame, that act of treason that went on in the White House. Day 298 since the search for weapons of mass destruction started. Day 884 since the United States Senate was considering whether or not to pass the Patriot Act. And by coincidence, Tom Daschle and Pat Leahy, the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee that was considering the Patriot Act and considering not passing it, Tom Daschle, the leader of the Democrats, who, because of Jim Jeffords' defection, had the control of the Senate at the time. But just by coincidence, these two guys got the anthrax. We're still looking. for where it came from 884 days later. The war on terrorism, 895 days since Osama bin Laden. Anyhow, let's hear Alan Greenspan. Here we are. You know, he's in the news today. He's worried and puzzled, according to the New York Times or the Federal Reserve officials. And they just don't know what's going on, you know. And they go on to point out the Fed may be reluctant to change policy until after the presidential elections in November. Gee, what a surprise. Anyhow, here's Greenspan responding to Bernie Sanders, basically saying, Mr. Greenspan, you know, you're out of touch with America.
Congressman, we have the highest standard of living in the world.
No, we do not. You go to Scandinavia and you will find that people have a much higher standard of living in terms of education, health care, and decent paying jobs. Wrong, Mr. Greenspan.
May I answer your question?
You sure may.
Thank you. For a major industrial country, we have created the most advanced technologies, the highest standard of living for a country of our size. Our economic growth is crucial to us. The incomes, the purchasing power of our employees, our workers, our people, are by far more important than what it is we produce. I submit to you that, may I?
I'm just making a face.
Major focus of monetary policy is to create an environment in this country which enables capital investment and innovation to advance. We are at the cutting edge of technologies in the world. We are doing an extraordinary job over the years. And
he's mumbling. I mean, it's
to the United States.
Yes.
Our immigration rates are very high. And why? Because they think this is a wonderful country to come.
That is an incredible answer.
Yeah.
Mr. Paul?
And it is a wonderful country to come to. And Mr. Greenspan is right about that. And one of the things that made it wonderful, one of the things that absolutely made this country wonderful, was the economic policies of Franklin Roosevelt, who said labor should have the right to organize. I mean, let's go back to Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln was the first United States president to defend the right of strikers and to call off to instruct the states to stop private corporations from using private armies to beat up and in some cases murder striking workers. The word strike was so new during Abraham Lincoln's presidency. Carl Sandburg writes about this eloquently in his biography of Lincoln. The word strike was so new that when newspaper headlines talked about it, they put the word strike in quotes. And you've got that. And FDR came along and he said, you know, we're going to stand up to the power of the economic royalists, and we're going to create a middle class in America. The free market is a fantasy. When conservatives say let the market decide, This is the absolute con job of the cons. I mean, this is because the free market exists on the back of what? You've got to have a stable currency. Where does that come from? Government. You've got to have court systems to enforce contracts in order to have a marketplace. Where does that come from? Government. You've got to have an employed workforce. An educated workforce. Where does that come from in the United States? Public education. What's that? A function of government. You've got to have public highways that people can transport themselves on, or roadways or airways to get to work. Government provides that. You have public rights of way that our telephone lines and our cable lines and our internet lines run on that are maintained by government. Our power lines, our power rights of way, in most cases now still in the United States, are maintained by government. And perhaps most important, all of this is protected by fire departments and police departments. And this is all we the people. We the people are creating this vast infrastructure in which A free market can exist, a so-called free market, in which a marketplace can exist. Basically, what we are doing is we're setting up the playing field. It's like baseball. We're laying out the bases. We're setting up the field. We're rolling out the grass. We're getting the stands ready. We're saying, here's the... And then we get to say, because we created this, we the people. And I'm telling you, you go back and read the writings of the founders, particularly Jefferson, they were absolutely unambiguous about this. They understood these issues. It's no coincidence that Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations was published in 1776. And that only once in that book does the phrase, the invisible hand of the marketplace, appear. And there, it's a warning. These guys understood this, and they understood that we have a right to say, okay, you guys, if you want to play the game of business to make money, that's fine. In fact, we think that's wonderful. That will grow this nation. But you have to do it in a way that is going to serve society first. And when you do that, and when you play that game in a way that harms we the people, that poisons our water, that poisons our air, That throws us into slave labor, into slave wages, as it were. Remember, it was just 6 years ago, Alan Greenspan was quoted in the Wall Street Journal as saying that part of his job was to keep worker to maintain a certain level of, quote, worker insecurity, end quote, to prevent what he calls wage inflation, quote, end quote. Now, we can't have those workers earning too much. You can have CEOs earning 500 times as much. They're worth it, after all. Anyhow, I'm ranting here, but this is such an important point. When the cons say, "Oh, just leave it up to the free market," no, we define the marketplace. We the people. And two clear times in the history of the United States, we have said we are going to define the rules, and here are the rules of the game, guys. If capital can aggregate, so can labor. If people are going to engage in business, that's great, and there are some rules to the game. And the con agenda, the conservative agenda, Grover Norquist saying, we don't want to kill government, we just want to shrink it down to the size where we can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub. That agenda, that deregulation agenda, you've heard the guys on from the Heritage Foundation, American Enterprise History, you've heard them on this program tell you right flat out, their agenda is to say, no, we the people, government has no right telling business how to conduct itself. No business defining the rules of the game. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number if you'd like to be on the program. David in Pennsylvania is on the line. Hey, David, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, thank you, Tom. I've been listening to your show, and I must say it's very informative and eye-opening.
Thank you.
To say the least. And I believe what you're talking about when you talk about how wealth corrupts political system is a plurocracy. I can't even pronounce the word.
Yeah, but see, wealth doesn't have to corrupt the political. It is possible to have wealth and not have it corrupt the political system. You just have laws that say you can't do that. I interrupted you, David. Go ahead.
That's okay. But what I think most people don't realize is that capitalism couldn't exist in this country if it wasn't for corporate welfare.
Well, I'm not sure that that's true. I think capitalism could do just fine without corporate welfare. But, you know, the reality is that about $156 million a year is corporate welfare in America, and about $51 million a year is human welfare. And so when the cons start whining about welfare, look out. I mean, it's another con job.
Well, the thing is, you know, America will not change until the people decide that change is needed. And I'm just wondering how much more suppression of the middle class and poor needs to happen before they fight back.
Well, that's and well said, David, and thank you for the call. I appreciate your comment. Our quote for the day from John Kennedy, in fact, addresses this very issue. I mean, you know, you've got the cons out there trying to spin this thing. John Kennedy said, "We are not afraid to entrust the American people with unpleasant facts, foreign ideas, alien philosophies, and competitive values. For a nation that is afraid to let its people judge the truth and falsehood in an open market is a nation that is afraid of its people." And here you have a situation now where George W. Bush, this reporter incorrectly quoted John Kerry as saying that foreign leaders told him that he should get elected. He actually had said more leaders. But and the reporter has come clean about this. But nonetheless, the cons just went nuts with this. And George Bush says, if you're going to make an accusation, you ought to back it up with facts. And, of course, all across America, people's jaws dropped open. You know, like, how about the fact that there are no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, that there was no uranium in Iraq, in Africa, that, the tax cuts have not created the benefits that George Bush says. How about the fact that a senior administration official in the White House 244 days ago committed an act of what George Herbert Walker Bush called treason. And this president, his response?
And I don't know if we're going to find out. The senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
No, he has got no idea. No idea whatsoever. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Jeff in Denver's on the line. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. Hey, it's been interesting. I've been watching Lou Dobbs a little bit now, and
He's starting to wake up. You know, he got kind of corrupted by getting a degree at Harvard in economics, and I think he was studying David Ricardo too much and not paying attention to old John Maynard.
Yeah, well, he's even being having the media and the cons are attacking him now. It's like in one case he said, none of the attacks on my position on outsourcing has a news organization addressed the facts.
No, and they can't.
Yeah, and he's now saying that there are 15 million unemployed.
Yes.
And I saw him getting arguments with people, and nobody addresses the facts with him. He's a very reasoned person, it seems now.
Yeah.
And I'd love to see you have a conversation with him. He's just, I think, really calling it pretty clean now.
Yeah, I'm quite impressed by Lou Dobbs. I was unimpressed before, you know, like during the Iraq War. I mean, he was this cheerleader and he was a gung ho Republican, and he's made really no efforts over the years to hide the fact that he's a Republican, and what he considers himself a conservative. And somewhere along the way, he got it, or he got a piece of it. He still, what amazes me is that people still don't realize. I mean, you hear these arguments, and I don't think even Lou Dobbs perhaps fully gets it, that business is just a game that gets played, and there are rules to the game, and there are referees to the game, and the rules get defined by we the people, and the referees are appointed and elected officials. And that's why you have the Securities and Exchange Commission. That's why you have the laws that you have in governance in the United States. And we can make the rules however we want. It's that's part of it being a democracy. If we want to have a middle class, we can have a middle class. If we don't want to have a middle class, we can wipe out the middle class. And that's what the cons have been doing since 1980 with Reagan. And if we want to bring it back, we need to get somebody in office who has the same vision Franklin Roosevelt had. You know, it's just lay it out. That's it.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to see people like Lou waking up. It's just sad to see that people, how many people attack him for it rather than listen to him.
Yeah, absolutely. Jeff, I'm right there with you. Thanks for the call. I appreciate
Thanks.
It. Great to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Just as an example, I mean, this my favorite law and my monthly rant. I got it. I want to, because there's always new people listening and people listening here and there. You know, somebody listens for 10 minutes in their car. This is a law that was on the books in Wisconsin. It's just a typical law. It was on, this kind of law was on the books in every state in the United States. Essentially from the founding of this country up through the Gilded Age, through the 1880s. And then most of these laws got pulled off the books in the 1880s, 1890s. And then what happened was it wiped out the American middle class. I mean, you read the history of the Gilded Age, and it's mostly the history of the rich folks, you know, the Astors and the Morgans and the Rockefellers. But you read carefully. The middle class got wiped out during that time. There was a huge, huge bunch of working poor, and there was a small number of very, very wealthy people whose dynasties still exist. And so the progressive and populist movement came along, and this law was passed in 1905 in Wisconsin, and it's almost exact language as they had back in 1800 during Thomas Jefferson's rule, and this was not repealed until 1954. Political contributions by corporations. No corporation doing business in this state shall pay or contribute or offer, consent, or agree to pay or contribute directly or indirectly any money, property, free service of its officers or employees or thing of value to any political party, organization, committee, or individual for any political purpose whatsoever, or for the purpose of influencing legislation of any kind, or to promote or defeat the candidacy of any person for nomination, appointment, or election to any political office. The penalty? 5 years in prison. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 10 minutes before the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or a mistake.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Ski resorts could be left high and dry in a warmer climate. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. If forecasts for global warming are correct, many of Europe's most popular ski resorts are likely to go bankrupt in the next few decades. That's according to a report presented in December at the World Conference on Sport and Environment. The report says the ski season will grow shorter and the snow line will move higher into the mountains. In Switzerland, as many as 60% of all ski resorts could close in the next 30 to 50 years. One researcher says the scenario is not quite so bleak in North America. Daniel Scott is a geographer at the University of Waterloo in Ontario, and he studies recreation and tourism. He says ski resorts in eastern North America will face warming temperatures and less snow, but he says they're better equipped than European resorts to deal with the problem.
In Europe, they don't have the sort of extensive snowmaking systems that we do have here in eastern North America, where every ski area has almost 100% coverage of their skiable terrain in snowmaking.
Scott says snowmaking is not as widespread at resorts in western states and provinces, and it's not clear how they'll deal with warmer winters. Scott says resorts that try to compensate for a shortage of natural snow will see expenses go up.
They'll have to make more snow which will have costs associated with it. I think the average ski area in the Northeast is something like $750,000 U.S. a year. So it's a substantial, you know, amount of money. And if you're doubling the amount of snow that you have to make, well, your costs go up accordingly.
Scott says the news about Europe's ski resorts has drawn a lot of attention, and many resort owners are now looking at their abilities to weather environmental change. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, voodoo economics. Oh, yeah. Good old voodoo economics. Powell assures Indian leaders that U.S. backs outsourcing. Today's newspaper, this article from the New York Times by Stephen R. Weissman. Secretary of State Colin Powell sought to assure Indians on Tuesday that the Bush administration would not try to halt the outsourcing of high-technology jobs to their country. What we are going to do is whine about the fact that they actually have a trade policy in India. They actually charge tariffs on imported goods. What? They're protectionists in India? Yes. The United States, we're trying to do this. See, this was the key line. Maybe you didn't catch it. In Greenspan's response, he said, with our fiscal policy, we're trying to, you know, quack, quack, quack. Of course, he's in charge of fiscal policy. But the point is that this administration has been trying to regulate trade by allowing the dollar to fall, hoping that that's going to make foreign imports more expensive. And having a similar effect to putting up tariffs, like Smoot-Hawley did, and many, many other legislators. You know, the first U.S. tariff goes back to the 1700s, 1784. And it hasn't worked. And it won't work. And even if it did work, it would be indiscriminate. It would be incredibly destructive. So now we've got this guy, Robert Dunn, an American. He worked for a Las Vegas-based company, Creative Healthcare Solutions, 55 years old. He's decided to outsource himself. He's gone to Bangalore, India. He's looking for a job. He figures with 30 years in the experience in the IT, the information technology field, he should be able to get a job over there. And sure enough, the Financial Times today says up to 25% of traditional information technology jobs will be relocated to developing or developed countries by 2010, from developed to developing countries by 2010. A quarter. Global sourcing is becoming a mainstream delivering model, says Ian Marriott of Gartner, this company that did the survey. The potential cost advantages are so persuasive that companies that don't consider it seriously risk their shareholders a disservice. You got to do it, he said. No, you don't. We can redefine the rules in the game. We really, really can. We have many times in the United States. It's time to do it again. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, The Real Democracy Zone. It's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA. You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
Mexican immigrants who come to the United States hoping to find a better life also find workplace hazards that make them the most likely to die on the job. An investigation by the Associated Press finds that Mexican immigrants are 80% more likely to die on the job than native-born Americans, and about twice as likely as other immigrant groups. The AP says that's not only because Mexicans tend to take more dangerous work, but because fines for employers whose workers die at work are...
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. So-called free trade is losing support in the United States, and the loss has accelerated in the last 5 years, according to a comprehensive survey by the University of Maryland's Program on International Policy Attitudes. 53% of those polled want the U.S. to rethink its free trade policies in the light of the massive job loss it's created. And this year, the PIPA survey finds support collapsing rapidly as you move higher up the income ladder, a complete reversal from the...
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. John Kerry declared victory in the Democratic presidential race Tuesday and formally opened the general election campaign with an assault on George W. Bush's credibility. With a win in Illinois, Kerry acknowledged he had enough delegates to July's nominating convention to claim the right to challenge Bush in November, a formality given that most delegate counters put him over the top last week. Accused by the White House in a new television ad airing in West Virginia of voting against funds for troops in Iraq, Kerry struck back by questioning Bush's credibility and saying he was blaming others for his own administration's failures. Kerry said Bush had squandered a budget surplus, misrepresented the cost of a Medicare bill, and misled Americans about the threat from weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, while pointing blame at former President Bill Clinton, Saddam Hussein, or the September 11th attacks. Madrid police believe six Moroccans were behind last week's train bombings amid allegations that outgoing Prime Minister José María Aznar had tried to orchestrate a cover-up. The El País newspaper said police had identified six Moroccan citizens as the perpetrators. Aznar's party blamed the atrocity on armed Basque separatist group ETA, despite evidence to the contrary, triggering accusations that it was covering up an Al-Qaeda link for electoral ends. A newspaper executive said Aznar had personally telephoned various media bosses on the day of the attacks to insist ETA was to blame. A federal judge has dismissed a lawsuit accusing two former advisors to Bill Clinton of defaming Jennifer Flowers when they suggested that the audio tapes she used to try to prove she and Clinton had an affair had been doctored. U.S. District Judge Philip M. Proe ruled that no reasonable jury could find clear and convincing evidence that James Carville and George Stephanopoulos acted with malice. The Flowers lawsuit sought unspecified punitive and compensatory damages. It was filed on her behalf in 1999 by Judicial Watch, a conservative Washington public interest group. President Tom Fitton said Tuesday the group may appeal. More news after this.
I'm Arthur Davis. You may have a serious eye condition and not even know it. Vision loss is not a normal part of aging. Some vision changes are normal. Some are due to eye disease. Do you know the difference? Open your eyes to the facts. To get more information about vision and aging, or find out about what help is available if you're having vision problems, call Lighthouse International at 1-800-829-0500 or visit www.lighthouse.org.
A Houston woman gave birth Monday to two sets of identical twins, something their doctor said is only likely to happen in about 1 in 11 million pregnancies. Cheryl McGowan gave birth by cesarean section to Jacob, Jacoby, Jason, and Justin. The twins weighed from 2 pounds 5 ounces to 3 pounds 4 ounces. The babies were born during their mother's 30th week of pregnancy. For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman Newsbreak is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Alzheimer's disease, little known just a generation ago, is now so common in our land that the term has come to be used as a joke. As in, excuse me for forgetting your name, I'm having an Alzheimer's moment. Of course, it's no joke, but a cruel and fatal disease that essentially dissolves the brain, causing victims literally to lose their minds. Alzheimer's has been surging in America over the past two decades, now being the eighth leading cause of death, inflicting some 4 million of our people. But there's one aspect of this that the economic and political powers in our country don't want scientists discussing in public. Autopsy studies done at Yale and elsewhere show that some percentage of people diagnosed with Alzheimer's were misdiagnosed. They actually had another brain-wasting disease called CJD, and thousands of these cases might well be a variety of CJD caused by mad cow-infected meat that the victims ate years earlier. Yes, this means that mad cow disease in humans, which the beef industry has adamantly insisted does not exist at all in America, could actually be widespread and already killing people under a pseudonym. Two minimal steps should be taken immediately to know the full truth and protect public health. First, the Ag Department, which now conducts mad cow tests on only about 0.1% of the 30 million cattle slaughtered in our country each year, should test all cattle, as Japan does. However, the Bushites have rejected this move at the behest of Tyson and other big beef purveyors. Second, there should be a national monitoring system of all CJD cases to determine the extent of mad cow infection behind these cases. However, the Bushites have rejected formal petitions to enact such basic monitoring, which is done for all sorts of other diseases, again, not wanting to upset the beef purveyors. This is Jim Hightower saying, to fight for public health over corporate greed, call the Organic Consumers Association, 218-226-4164.
Wow, that's hot.
I think it's cool.
That's be definitely hot.
I don't see it that way.
I forgot, you're more right brain.
Right. 24 prints a minute. That's cool.
In black and white or color?
Cool.
For under $1,000.
Cool.
From Xerox?
Really cool.
Sorry, 24 color pages a minute is nothing but hot.
You think anything that's fast is hot?
That's cold.
The new Xerox Phaser 8400, the world's fastest office color printer for under $1,000. To find out how
cool,
hot
it really is, visit Xerox.com/office.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too. But who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back, friends. It's the True People's Radio, the place where smart people get their news. The Tom Hartman radio program. Is Bush going to get busted here? U.S. government faked Bush news reports. This article, not in an American newspaper, but in The Guardian, the British newspaper. TV news reports in America that showed President George Bush getting a standing ovation from potential voters have been exposed as fake, it has emerged. U.S. government admitted it paid actors to pose as journalists in video news releases sent to TV stations intending to convey support for new laws about health benefits. See, they're talking about the Medicare bill. Investigators are examining the film segments in which actors pretending to be journalists praised the benefits of the new law passed last year by President Bush to see if they could be construed as propaganda. The New York Times reported on this also. Do U.S. videos for TV news come under scrutiny? An article by Robert Pear. Federal investigators are scrutinizing television segments. They say essentially the same thing. Is this administration going to be prosecuted for promoting propaganda? Have they no shame? It is absolutely mind-boggling. And you look at this Medicare legislation. Promoted with a $7 million ad campaign, was it, that AARP did? William Minnelli, the head of AARP, was the guy whose ad agency did the Harry and Louise ads that destroyed health care under the Clinton administration, that stopped it dead in its tracks, health care reform. And
And so then they put together this Medicare bill that's basically, you know, a giveaway to the big drug companies. No, it's illegal for the government to negotiate for discounts on drugs. Illegal! Now, the Pentagon can do it, of course. That's no problem, Department of Defense. But nobody else can do it. And you can't go to Canada to get drugs there because even though they're the same drugs, they might be dangerous. Look at all those dead Canadians standing at the border, desperate to get into the United States. Have you noticed them recently? I haven't. I must have missed that. 1-866-889-8894. Our number, Chris in New Mexico, is on the line. Hey, Chris, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Well, thank you, Tom. It's kind of like we fell down the rabbit hole and found there's no bottom to it. We just keep on falling.
Yeah. Which
my
pill did you take?
Today is, how many members of the Coalition of the Bribed do you think are going to use the June 30th date that we're going to hand over sovereignty to the Iraqis, supposedly? How many of them are going to use that date as an excuse to bring their soldiers home, you know? Because the Dutch, who have about, you know, 1,300 soldiers there, Prime Minister, what's his name, Balkenende, was sitting right next to Bush, and he was asked pointedly the question, and he refused to answer the question about whether he was going to have his troops there past that date.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if this bodes very, very ill for the coalition.
We have, as so many of us said before this voluntary war in Iraq started, which had nothing to do, as George Bush himself said, Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with 9/11. There are two separate things here going on, right? There's our in my opinion wrongly done, quote, war on terrorism, in which we're creating more of it. And then we've got this war in Iraq, which is further stirring up the pot. And the rest of the world is figuring this out. They are absolutely figuring it out. And, you know, I'd say the coalition of the billing is getting it. I mean, and what happened in Spain is causing a lot of, it's probably causing a lot of, not just head scratching, but, you know, consternation across Europe.
But understand that we can't vote for John Kerry because he voted against the $87 billion for the war effort. You know, if this is the best they have, then I'm kind of heartened because all you have to do is point out that Bush got the $87 billion, and he's the one cutting veterans' benefits and combat pay, and he's the one who sent hundreds and hundreds of young Americans to their deaths for reasons that turned out to be fiction. They can attack Kerry's record, but they certainly can't defend their own.
No, you're absolutely right, Chris, and spot on, spot on.
Take care, man.
Thanks for the call. Well, we'll see. And, you know, John Kerry's picture on the $20 bill there, cover up Andrew Jackson's hair with two thumbs, you know, one over the left side of the picture and one over the top, and just tell me who's on that $20 bill these days. Maybe it's a message from God or something. You know, Pat Robertson talked to God. He said George Bush is going to win in a landslide. Maybe there's other messages coming that we're not quite noticing. Jim in Atlanta is called 1-866-889-8894. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Well, good afternoon, Tom.
Hey, Jim.
It looks like more democracy is coming to Iraq today. They've blown up a six-story hotel a few minutes ago, and looks like there's 10-plus at the minimum dead.
Oh my.
They've run the U.S. troops and a lot of the coalition fighters out of there. They came over to help them, and they said, get the hell out of here, and they did. And, you know, I believe this is the beginning of the end for democracy in Iraq. I think within the month there will be total civil war in Iraq. I believe that Spain will pull out. And Poland and the Dutch and the rest will follow suit. And I believe all this is going to crumble at the Bush administration's feet. And, you know, today is my birthday, and St. Patrick ran all the snakes out of Ireland. And, you know, maybe, just maybe, we can vote all these snakes out of the White House.
There you go.
Thanks, Tom.
You're welcome. Happy birthday, Jim, and thanks for the call. Good point, and thanks for the news headline. I'll have to check that out during the next break. It's such a tragedy. And it is exactly, I mean, when people were demonstrating in the street all around the world, before George Bush decided to have his voluntary war, his war of choice in Iraq. The largest demonstrations in the history of the world. And what were people saying? They weren't saying, I'll give peace a chance. No, no, no. They were saying, there are appropriate ways to deal with this situation. You bring in the United Nations, you let the inspectors do their job for another couple of months and make sure that there really are no weapons of mass destruction there, as it looks like is the case now. If there are weapons of mass destruction, then you pull together an international coalition, if that's what it takes, like it did in 1991. You do it the right way. You don't just go in like some cowboy from Texas with your guns blazing. And the world was saying this to us, and the world was saying to us, and if you do go in like some cowboy from Texas with your guns blazing, and yeah, you can get a few people on your side, you know, 1,500 troops from Spain, whatever, and what you're going to do is you're going to kick open a hornet's nest if you don't do it very right and very carefully. What did George Bush have to say to the Iraqi people? I mean, this is the kind of thing that is so concerning and revealing from the point of view of the Iraqis. When George Bush decided to start his war in Iraq, he went on national television, and in the middle of his speech, he turned and he said, "And to the Iraqi people, I'd like to say something." And I was sitting there expecting him to say, "You know, your young men in uniform are just like our young men in uniform. None of them wants to die. Lay down your arms. Don't kill our people. We won't kill your people. We're just after Saddam. We just want to bring liberty to." You know, I was expecting some kind of high rhetoric. You know, something worthy of the quality of the speechwriters that George Bush hires. But instead, apparently, what we got was the output from the Dick Cheney energy meetings. Because George Bush turned to the Iraqi people on that national television, this was just a year ago, what, a week or two from now, and he said, he looked him right in the eye, he says, "I want to speak to you," and he said,
"Your fate will depend on your actions. Do not destroy oil wells."
Do not destroy oil wells. Say what? Do not destroy the oil wells. And what did we secure when we arrived? Not the museums, yes, they were looted. No, they weren't. Yes, it turns out, yes, they were. Not the government buildings, other than the Ministry of Oil, which we secured. No, we secured the oil wells. And it's just so. We know now, as a result of Larry Klayman and the JudicialWatch.org. The guy who, he just lost a lawsuit in the Jennifer Flowers case. I mean, it was his original lawsuit that led to Bill Clinton and Monica and all that kind of stuff. I'm sure he's quite proud of that. And he also sued Dick Cheney. Their motto is, because no one's above the law. And he sued Dick Cheney and said, you have no right, you're a public servant, you have no right to have secret meetings about the energy policy of the United States. This is the people's business. And you can't just invite in a bunch of oil industry executives and write the energy bill, write the energy policy for the United States and not have a discussion about it, not let us know who is there. But now, as a result of this lawsuit, some of these documents have come out, and we know that in April of 2001, a half a year before 9/11, they were carving up the oil fields of Iraq and determining which oil companies in what countries might want to buy the oil from the roughly 100 different oil fields scattered around Iraq. You can see the documents on judicialwatch.org. You can see them on their website. They're right there, the PDFs. So this... Jim, I think you may well be right, and this is what people were all around the world were warning the Bush administration about. You've got the Shiites who are aligned with Iran, who are the majority. They're about 60% of the Iraqi people. You've got the Sunnis who have historically held power. And they're actually, you know, the Sunnis are kind of sort of a variation, you know, sort of like Catholic Protestant. They're sort of a variation of the same strain of Islam as the Wahhabists in Saudi Arabia, which is Osama bin Laden. And then you got the Kurds up in the north who, you know, Turkey has been oppressing for, you know, all the way back to the Ottoman Empire. It just ended at, you know, around World War I, but it goes way back. And the Kurds would like to have their own nation, thank you very much. And Turkey doesn't want to have anything to do with that. And it's you don't just bust into something like this and go, "Hey guys, here we are. Everybody submit. Please be nice." At least you don't do it all by yourself. If you do it with a bunch of Arab nations and the United Nations, maybe it'll work. Maybe they'll trust you. But when you say to them, "Don't attack the oil wells, we're coming," and you're an oil executive who's now the president of the United States, it's just not going to work. I'm sorry, George. This is Tom Harbin. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
After the towers fell, our streets, homes, and offices were coated with dust-containing asbestos and other cancer-causing chemicals. But instead of heeding the health warnings of their own experts, the Bush White House told us it was safe to go back into Lower Manhattan when it wasn't. There is a better way to protect us, Mr. President. Take action now that keeps more harm from happening. Clean up the world trade dust that's still in our homes and workplaces. And be honest with us. Don't hold back health warnings that will keep us safe.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
Is corporate greed primarily a male problem? According to Catalyst, a nonprofit group devoted to the promotion of women in business, it's hard to hide from the bottom line. It studied the stock performance of 353 Fortune 500 companies between 1996 and 2000 and found those with the highest proportion of women executives produced a 34% greater return to shareholders than the most male-dominated firms. Even so, only one in five executives at the most gender-diverse companies were female.
Stories of courage need to be shared. That's why we want to tell you about Senators Bob Graham and Bill Nelson. They have stood strong to protect our coastlines from exploration and drilling by powerful oil and gas companies. But the fight's not over. Congress is now pushing an energy bill that still threatens our coastlines with oil and gas activities, hands billions of dollars in tax breaks over to the oil, gas, coal, and nuclear companies, and could exempt polluters from clean air and safe drinking water laws. What's more, this so-called energy bill doesn't cut our dangerous dependence on foreign oil, fix what's wrong with our aging energy grid, adequately promote renewable wind and solar power, protect consumers, or increase the efficiency or security of our energy system. There is a better way. Call Senators Graham and Nelson at 202-225-3121. Thank them for their courage and ask them to reject this dangerous energy bill. Paid for.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's Tom Harbin helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. Yeah, I got the radical middle. This is where most Americans live, in my opinion, is understanding that, yes, we would like a middle class. No, we don't want to be the world's police officers. And, yes, there is a role for what's called multilateralism, right, the United Nations. In the world. I mean, these are institutions, these are values that Americans have held for centuries. For centuries, I mean, going back to the founding of this country. And, anyway. 1-866-889-8894. And, Chuck is back on line one. Hey, Chuck, Tom Hartman here with you. Chuck, where? In Greensboro, North Carolina?
Yeah, the Triad.
Okay.
Winston-Salem.
Hey, Chuck. What's up?
Well, I'm a heating and cooling contractor, and I recall reading an article back right before Clinton got elected in the magazine called Foreign Affairs, put out by the Council on Foreign Affairs.
Yes.
A lot of highbrow articles, doesn't get a lot of circulation, and they talked about energy efficiency, and Carter put into play a lot of rules and regulations that actually contributed to the economy on the order of $150 billion a year. And
Carter created a booming little industry in solar power and alternative energy and insulation and things. And then the first official act of office that Ronald Reagan did when he came into office was to remove the solar collectors from the roof of the White House that Jimmy Carter had put there.
Well, they expired in 86, and at that time we were very almost to the point of self-sufficiency, and much more so than we are now. And once they expired, you see what's happened. We're dependent again. We're back in the same cycle again. And we had the ability, in the article they mentioned that, I can't remember who the guy was that wrote it, but...
This is no secret,
Chuck. Station wagon that gets 90 miles a gallon. We have that capability now if we just go for it. And it just seems like the oil companies are running the grist mill in the United States and the world.
Well, you've got an oil industry executive who is the president of the United States. You got an oil industry executive who's the vice president of the United States. You got the national security advisor Condoleezza Rice has an oil tanker named after her from her former employer Chevron, I believe it is. And I mean, what do you expect? What do you expect? This is what we've got, and it's what we have to change. And you're absolutely it's like an addiction. It's an absolute addiction. And you go back and you look at what happened in 1972-73, the Arab oil embargo. Louise and I were living in Detroit at the time, and in fact we had just had our first child, and it was incredible. I mean, you know, there was the trucker strike happened because of the high gasoline prices and Nixon doing his price controls and everything, and the supermarkets just went empty. You couldn't find food for a couple of days, and people were standing in line for hours, sometimes a half a day. People were shooting each other in lines to get gasoline with the gasoline rationing, you know, your odd or even license plate number. And back then, we were only importing about 22-23% of our oil from outside the United States. Now it's about half. And Jimmy Carter said, we got to do something about this. He got us going on it. And Ronald Reagan reversed course because he was brought to power in large part by the same people that brought George Bush to power, the oil industry, the energy industry. And it's a disaster. It's an absolute disaster. And it's led us right into Iraq.
where 10% of the planet's oil is sitting. Chuck, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894 is our number. And John in New York is on the line. Hey, John, we've only got about 10 seconds left. Hang on over the break, and I'll pick you up on the other side, all right?
Okay.
Good to have you there, though. Stick around. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, and we'll be right back with you.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A United Nations report on racism suggests Canada should pay reparations to Chinese migrant workers brought into the country between the late 19th and early 20th century. Canada charged a head tax on Chinese who arrived between 1885 and 1923. They each paid between $50 and $500 to be allowed in. The UN report suggests the government collected up to $23 million from the scheme, which it recommends be repaid. Canada's Minister for Multiculturalism has rejected the report.
The first ever labor contract for Walt Disney part-time workers will be put to a vote next week. The tentative deal was negotiated by the Service Trades Council, representing 6,100 part-time Disney workers, ranging from hotel employees to costume characters. The tentative agreement raises wages each year through 2007, bumping starting pay from $6.35 to $6.70 per hour, provides grievance procedures, allows workers greater job flexibility, and recognizes seniority rights. However, the pay raise still leaves some workers under the federal poverty level.
Being a journalist in Iraq just got a lot tougher. This month, the U.S. occupying authority implemented a requirement that all journalists working in Iraq be registered by and accredited with the military. A crew with the Korea Broadcasting System found out about the new rules the hard way last week when they were detained by U.S. troops and held for several hours, even after the Korean consulate vouched for their professional status. The International Federation of Journalists accuses the U.S. of attempting to intimidate and control journalists in Iraq, which hampers their ability to learn an accurate picture about the occupation and reconstruction effort. No comment from the U.S. military.
Popcorn lung is now a disease officially recognized by the courts. 32-year-old Eric Peoples contracted lung disease after working in a Missouri microwave popcorn factory for only a year and a half. Peoples sued, claiming artificial butter flavoring was to blame for his illness, and this week a Missouri jury agreed, awarding him $18 million. International Flavors and Fragrances Incorporated says its products pose no danger to popcorn consumers, though the company now issues respirators to its employees.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Of all the workers in the federal government, which have the most dangerous jobs? If you use OSHA injury rates as your yardstick, the answer would have to be airport screeners with the Transportation Security Administration. Last year, 19.4% of all screeners suffered some sort of mishap at the airport. Most common were strained muscles from lifting baggage. That on-the-job injury rate is more than three times the average for the entire federal workforce.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
They forever lost.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. A large explosion destroyed a hotel in central Baghdad. Rescuers pulled bodies from the rubble. Witnesses said it was a bomb blast. Two U.S. soldiers, this is from the New York Times, two U.S. soldiers tried to, just on their website now, two U.S. soldiers tried to help pull bodies from the wreckage, but angry Iraqis pushed them back. I'm telling you, George, you kick a hornet's nest and don't be surprised when you get stung. John in New York, we were talking and we got so rudely interrupted there by the need of all of us to make a living. Welcome back.
Not at all. Hey, Tom, I want to quickly throw an idea out and see what you think and what kind of traction it gains with the listeners. The whole discourse around this election is around the prevailing wisdom about the red and the blue states and this handicapping the odds of persuading a tiny sliver of swing voters. And I've just been thinking that there's not a lot of inspiration in that, And I feel a need for on our side of the aisle for a rise for this kind of rising sense of moral indignation and for us to set our sights on things. I know it's tilting at windmills, but on the idea of things like a landslide and a mandate.
I think it may well happen. I mean, I think there's a very real possibility that George Bush is just going to get tossed out on his butt, and it will be a landslide. Now, the reason you raise a really interesting point, though, and it's a really important one. The reason why there are so many states that are not in play doesn't have to do with the fact that there are more Republicans or Democrats in those particular states.
Right.
It has more to do with gerrymandering. It has to do with with the fact that when one party was in power or the other party was in power, and they are both guilty of this. The Republicans have been a little more blatant about it in the last 4 or 5 years than the Democrats, I think, ever have been. But the Democrats certainly have done that. They create these electoral areas that they look like a salamander. I mean, it was Congressman Jury from New Jersey who first started this stuff back in the late 19th century, and they named it gerrymandering, saying that the district that he helped create looked like a salamander. And they look like crop circles and stuff now. it's just outrageous.
Yeah.
And what we really need to do is have a Congress that has enough courage to campaign finance reform, public support, public financing of elections, go back to the electronic media and say you've got to give free time to we got to get money, and particularly corporate money, out of politics, number one. And number two, we need to say our electoral regions are simply going to be organized by absolutely nonpartisan groups. Bring in some bureaucrats who work for the government and owe no allegiance to any political party, and say divide it up based on population, which is what the founders had in mind. And then you would actually have national elections that were national elections.
Well, absolutely. And over the long term, there's that's unquestionably what we need. But I mean, I think you'd agree, and you've touched on this a number of times, for this election, it's so important that this outreach be made on both sides of the aisle. I mean, the Democrats alone are not going to elect a new president. We absolutely have to, at least get some measure of what you call, I guess, classical Republicans or true conservatives to understand the coup that's taking place in their own party.
Yeah, I would say, I'm running out of words, actually, because the problem is that the word conservative has been hijacked by these extremists.
Right. And the moment I think of in history, and I'm sure you can quote it better than I, but when somebody finally said to Joe McCarthy, sir, I don't know the exact quote, but,
Have
you no shame?
Yeah.
I mean, somewhere along the line during the course of the campaign, whether it's Kerry or somebody, we have to find the words and the moment, the opportunity to put the whole administration in that position of being unveiled in that way.
Yeah, that was, I think, 1954, the Army-McCarthy hearings, and that was Walsh was the guy's name.
Do you remember better than me what he
said? I don't remember. I mean, I was 3 years old when it happened, but I see newscasts of it enough, whatever.
Sure.
But
you know what I'm saying? That sense of the whole country, both sides of the aisle, Republicans, Democrats, finally just feeling kind of a... tainted by the whole thing and just saying, you know, stop it, you guys, just stop it, you know, get out of here.
Yeah.
That's what I think we need to shoot for and what we, you know, what will deliver us the kind of mandate. I mean, that's the thing. I really not only want to see Kerry win, I want to see Kerry win with a mandate to actually get in and make some change.
And that, you know, that's really happening.
Dream of and shoot for.
Yeah, this is what's happening, John. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see if Kerry can pull together that kind of passion and that kind of, you know, power behind him. But certainly Howard Dean had it. I mean, there is that sense in America. And certainly before the Iraqi war, when we had millions and millions of Americans turning out to say, no, give the UN another 3 months. You know, this is not an imminent threat. And George Bush lied to us and lied us into a war that led to the death of, 560 now of our young men and women, over 10,000 of them medically evacuated back to the United States. And that indignation is still there.
You're right. It is there. Let's just hope we can focus it and direct it and make something come of it.
Yeah.
Thanks. It was great talking to you.
Thanks, John. Okay. From your lips to God's ears. May it happen. May there be a new day for democracy in the United States of America. 20 minutes before the hour. This is Tom Hartman with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Disaster in Iraq. Another tragic explosion. We'll see how this plays out. Tim in West Michigan's on the line. Hey, Tim, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you, Tom. Kudos from neocon heaven.
Okay. There's a lot of good liberals in West Michigan, too. I was born in Grand Rapids, so I have some familiarity with it.
Well, I got to tell you, you're a breath of fresh air. But what I wanted to call about is a myth a lot of these Limbaughs and so on and so forth put out about the tax issue. I'm a small business owner. I own a third of a company that generates about $1.5 million a year of revenue. And I'll get specific only for example purposes. They keep talking about how the taxes will be increased under John Kerry or any Democrat. They used a $75,000 a year threshold, like you're in for all kinds of tax hell, and they use a 50% tax, marginal tax rate example. You know, I earned last year a little over $120,000, and my tax rate was barely over 20% after deductions. I got three kids.
Sure.
So, you know, this myth is out of it's insane. Our corporation's a C corporation. We drain everything out in commissions and bonuses so we don't have to pay any corporate tax. I think the most we paid in the last 10 years is $200.
Yeah.
So it's ridiculous to listen to these people sit there and say that everybody's taxed to death. Corporations are taxed to death, at least on a small business end. That's baloney.
Oh, it's absolute baloney. In fact, the Center for American Progress just put this thing out. The president touted his $1 trillion plan to make its tax cuts permanent, saying the previous, quote, tax cuts pertained directly to small business owners, end quote. He said, and this is George Bush's words, he said, when you hear people say we cut individual income taxes or tax on the rich, really what you ought to put in your mind is that these were taxes to help the entrepreneurial class of America, small businesses benefit, end quote. And then they go on to say, but the facts tell a different story. According to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, only 3.7% of small businesses are subject to the top tax rate made up the bulk of the president's 2001 tax cut. All told, small business owners, quote, would be far more likely to receive no tax reduction whatsoever from the administration's tax package than any benefit in any way, end quote. In his 2003 tax cut, the president promised that small business owners would receive an average tax cut of $2,042, but that average purposely included a small number of wealthy individuals who have some small business income, and in reality, 79% of small business owners received less than what the president promised. I'm a small business owner too. I've started a bunch of businesses in my life, and you're absolutely right. I mean, you run a small business. At the end of the year, you try to run your profits down to zero. You buy things. You do whatever, you know, and it's the small businesses that are building America, and they are not being helped by the fact that George Bush is giving billions in tax breaks to the Enrons in the world and the Halliburtons of the world. I mean, it's just wrong.
Well, even on an individual basis,
yeah,
that kind of income with 20% tax rate, that's including state, local, Medicare, Social Security.
Yeah.
That's everything. That's not just federal. So I'm paying 14% federal. So where these guys are coming up with me getting taxed to death is beyond me.
Yeah, good point, Tim. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. And you're spot on right. I mean, that's what Jack Kennedy said back in 1960. I played that tape. I played that cut for you yesterday, where he said, you know, the Republicans are distorting my record. I just want to be on the record as saying, you know, he took the top tax rate from 91% down to 70%. And then Reagan, of course, dropped it down to, 37%, as I recall. But he took it from 91 down to 70. But he said, we're going to close up all these loopholes because nobody's paying 91%. We're going to close up these loopholes, and we're actually going to raise tax revenues. And Jack Kennedy passed a tax increase that stimulated the American economy. It's a marvelous article in the Washington Post the day before yesterday. I shared it with you on Monday, I believe, about how there is absolutely, historically, no relationship between tax cuts and economic stimulus. It is a conservative fantasy. 1-866-889-8894. Israel, in New York State, a trucker on the line. Hey, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Oh, my love. Yesterday I was watching Fox News.
Oh, my. And my sympathies.
Yeah, and liberal on the media got from Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity a great compliment. They admitted that they are better than they are. They call them the elite media.
Yeah.
Elite is the best of the best.
There you go. Yes. Here we are with the elite media.
Right. One point. The new prime minister in Spain,
yes.
He doesn't want to pull out of Iraq. All he said that he wants the United Nations there. I mean, he doesn't want a coalition led by the U.S. He wants the moral high ground. That's the way it looks to me.
Yeah, and he's been very clear that he's not a pacifist.
Right. They're fighting terrorists for many years
I mean,
with the FTA. So they don't want to pull out. They want to go after Al-Qaeda. They want to go after those terrorists. They just don't want the U.N. to control the rebuilding of Iraq.
You mean the U.S.?
It's Halliburton.
Yeah. It's the rest of the world is going, why don't you guys do this in a reasonable fashion? And we're going, no, sorry, we're going to do it in a way that profits Halliburton, and we're going to let them reincorporate offshore so they don't have to pay any U.S. income taxes.
Anyway, they don't pay U.S. income tax, Halliburton. It's a Cayman Island company.
Yeah, I know. It's insane. Israel, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Nice point and well made. Always good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. The Bush administration policy, Bush and 9-1-1, the interesting piece in Time magazine in the March 13th issue. Joe Klein wrote an article in which he suggested the questions that should be asked of George Bush by the 9-11 commission that George Bush so aggressively fought coming into creation and tried to shut down last month and still has not testified before. And Joe Klein, this is a really good piece. He says they should ask George Bush, for example, why didn't you respond to the Al-Qaeda attack on the USS Cole? And Bush is, you know, sometimes the cons will say, the Al-Qaeda attacked the USS Cole on October 12th, 2000. That was on Clinton's watch, and he didn't do anything about it. 17 American soldiers were killed. Well, actually, Clinton did do something about it. They put together a very aggressive program. They were going to have special forces attacks. They were going to drop them into Afghanistan, take out the training camps. I mean, they had the whole plan laid out. I met Sandy Berger in Washington, D.C., the president's national security advisor. He told me, it wasn't just me, it was me and a few other reporters. And he just laid this stuff out. He said, hey, this is what we were going to do. And he handed it off, along with Richard Clark, his counterterrorism deputy. He handed off this plan. He says, okay, you know, we've got a new president coming in January. It was just, you know, 3 months later. They put together this plan to take out Osama and take out Al-Qaeda in response to the USS Cole bombing. And Condi Rice and Bill and George W. come in, and Dick Cheney. And Sandy Berger hands this thing off to them and says to Condoleezza Rice, Al-Qaeda is going to be your number one priority, and you need to do something about this right now. And we've got these special forces guys, and they are ready to go in there, and we are ready to take them out. And they say, well, you know, really, what's more important to us is Iraq. But Iraq had nothing to do with the USS Cole bombing. Well, still, I mean, 10% of the world's oil is in Iraq. And Saddam tried to kill George Bush's daddy. And George wants to prove that he can finish the job that his father didn't finish. Or whatever. I mean, you know, what's the rationale? So as Joe Klein says in Time magazine, this is a current issue of Time magazine, Sandy Berger believed Al-Qaeda was the greatest threat facing the U.S. as Clinton left office. Where were President Bush's priorities? Was President Bush even aware of this briefing that Sandy Berger gave to Condoleezza Rice? She has never testified under oath before any of these committees. Did, Joe Klein suggests, George Bush should be asked, did you consider an aggressive response to the bombing of the Cole or to the Al-Qaeda Millennium plot directed at the Los Angeles International Airport, which Bill Clinton stopped on December 14, 1999? Did you have any Al-Qaeda strategy at all? He goes on to point out, and I quote from Time magazine, as early as August 6th, Bush had been told that Al-Qaeda was planning to strike the U.S., perhaps using airplanes. What was his response to that? Well, Joe, I can tell you that. I mean, that's a matter of public record. We know. George told John Ashcroft, and John Ashcroft stopped flying on commercial airplanes. George immediately took the longest vacation in the history of the U.S. presidency, went to Texas. And when that was over and Al-Qaeda still hadn't struck, he went to Florida. I mean, it's no secret. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly, and they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Competition has driven some fisheries into deep trouble. An author sees a sustainable alternative. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Shrinking ocean fisheries are forcing ever tougher competition for what remains. Rod Fujita says that's pushed many fish species to dangerously low numbers. Fujita is the author of a new book called Heal the Ocean.
Nobody owns the fish, so nobody's responsible for them. And that sets up a vicious competition amongst individual fishermen and amongst countries to maximize their share of the catch, which is unspecified. They don't really know how much they're entitled to. So they build large fleets and subsidize them and try to create more powerful gear to catch as much as they can.
Fujita says high-tech fishing equipment and government subsidies are symptoms of a system gone awry, and he says blanket quotas for cod and other species only heated up the competition among fleets. Fujita says the answer lies in two bold steps, creating marine reserves where fishing is banned and in establishing specific catch allowances. He says each country and even individual fishing boats need to know how many fish they can catch each season.
The solution really is to specify use privileges for both individuals and countries so that people will know how much they're entitled to. It can be a percentage of the total allowable catch, for example. And once people have that share in hand, they can plan their businesses around that share rather than planning it around competition.
More than 90 of the world's fisheries are now covered by these individual quotas. British Columbia manages 25 Pacific fish species that way, and Fujita says the results have been good for conservation and for the fishing industry. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Cowboy, gunslinger, riding on the range. I'm white, educated, and I can't affect any change. Strange, as it sounds to me.
Change coming to America. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here on the True People's Radio. Great conversation in our chat room right now. One of the folks there, posted a great length about the debt levels now and during the Great Depression. I just looked at it. I'll share that with you tomorrow. It's fascinating. 1-866-889-88, and you can get to our chat room by going to tomhartman.com and just follow the links. Also archives of the program and all sorts of things. 1-866-889-8894. And let's see, John in Chicago is on the line. Hey, John, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom.
What's
great
up?
Show as always.
Thank you.
I was digging through the Chicago Tribune this morning, and I'm beginning to realize that this newspaper, to get any real news, you actually do have to dig into it. The death of the soldiers in Iraq is now pretty much relegated to page 4 or 5.
Yeah.
You never find it on the front page anymore. This is the Republican newspaper in Chicago, and then the other newspaper, the Sun-Times, is the Fox News newspaper in Chicago. So that's really all we have. So I'm really dealing with the lesser of two evils.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm looking on page 9, and lo and behold, tucked in a corner is a little blurb that says, "Polls show surge in anti-U.S. views."
Yeah, around the world.
Around the world, and
yeah.
This is apparently a Pew Research study.
Yeah.
And if I can quote it, it just simply said that the survey, the largest of its kind, found slipping support for the U.S. struggle against terrorism in most countries and negative views of the U.S. in all countries polled except Britain. And he says that the nonpartisan Pew Research Center, which conducted the survey, said the U.S. image has never polled lower.
Right, and even in Britain, it was like 50%. I mean,
yeah.
we were way, way down. Yeah, I saw that this morning.
So, in terms of winning the war on terror, I don't see how we can win a war on terror while we're losing the opinion of our own country.
Yeah, of the world,
of our peers.
Yeah, of our peers around the planet. Yeah, this is what you get with cowboy unilateralism. This is what you get with a foreign policy that says you're either with us or against us. You're either good or you're evil.
Right.
You know, it's wrong. It's broken. It doesn't work. John, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
To America.
Truth and common sense in broadcasting.
The cradle of the best and of the worst.
It's here they got the range of the machinery for change. And it's here they got the spiritual thirst. It's here the family is broken. And it's here the lonely say that the heart has got to open in a fundamental way. Democracy is coming to the USA.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Some corporate executive perks have legendary status, like former GE chairman Jack Welch's post-retirement Manhattan apartment and Knicks tickets, or former Tyco CEO Dennis Kozlowski's Mediterranean birthday party for his wife, all on the company tab. But most executive perks go unnoticed, thanks to weak rules at the Securities and Exchange Commission, which allow companies to classify such spending as general unspecified business expenses, exempt from public disclosure.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
With drug prices so much lower, it's no wonder America's seniors are getting on the bus and heading to Canada. Though it's technically illegal under FDA rules, senior citizens groups from northern states now routinely charter buses to Canadian pharmacies. Lawmakers in Ottawa created the patented Medicines Prices Review Board to bargain for lower prescription drug costs, and as a result, Canadians pay 30 to 70% less than U.S.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. John Kerry declared victory in the Democratic presidential race Tuesday and formally opened the general election campaign with an assault on George W. Bush's credibility. With a win in Illinois, Kerry acknowledged he had enough delegates to July's nominating convention to claim the right to challenge Bush in November, a formality given that most delegate counters put him over the top last week. Accused by the White House in a new television ad airing in West Virginia of voting against funds for troops in Iraq, Kerry struck back by questioning Bush's credibility and saying he was blaming others for his own administration's failures. Kerry said Bush had squandered a budget surplus, misrepresented the cost of a Medicare bill, and misled Americans about the threat from weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, while pointing blame at former President Bill Clinton, Saddam Hussein, or the September 11th attacks. Madrid police believe six Moroccans were behind last week's train bombings amid allegations that outgoing Prime Minister José María Aznar had tried to orchestrate a cover-up. The El País newspaper said police had identified six Moroccan citizens as the perpetrators. Aznar's party blamed the atrocity on armed Basque separatist group ETA, despite evidence to the contrary, triggering accusations that it was covering up an Al-Qaeda link for electoral ends. A newspaper executive said Aznar had personally telephoned various media bosses on the day of the attacks to insist ETA was to blame. A federal judge has dismissed a lawsuit accusing two former advisors to Bill Clinton of defaming Jennifer Flowers when they suggested that the audio tapes she used to try to prove she and Clinton had an affair had been doctored. U.S. District Judge Philip M. Proe ruled that no reasonable jury could find clear and convincing evidence that James Carville and George Stephanopoulos acted with malice. The Flowers lawsuit sought unspecified punitive and compensatory damages. It was filed on her behalf in 1999 by Judicial Watch, a conservative Washington public interest group. President Tom Fitton said Tuesday the group may appeal. More news after this.
I'm Oscar Davis. You may have a serious eye condition and not even know it. Vision loss is not a normal part of aging. Some vision changes are normal. Some are due to eye disease. Do you know the difference? Open your eyes to the facts. To get more information about vision and aging, or find out about what help is available if you're having vision problems, call Lighthouse International at 1-800-829-0500 or visit www.lighthouse.org.
A Houston woman gave birth Monday to two sets of identical twins, something their doctor said is only likely to happen in about 1 in 11 million pregnancies. Cheryl McGowan gave birth by cesarean section to Jacob, Jacoby, Jason, and Justin. The twins weighed from 2 pounds 5 ounces to 3 pounds 4 ounces. The babies were born during their mother's 30th week of pregnancy. For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
If you think corporate world can't get any more conniving, you've not figured on Monsanto. This is the biotech outfit that's trying to profit by putting its artificial growth hormones into our milk supply. Since consumers overwhelmingly reject this adulteration, Monsanto lobbyists got our government to let this milk be marketed with no labeling of the adulteration, so we milk buyers won't know what we're getting. The good news is that several dairies have responded by declaring on their milk cartons, "No artificial growth hormones used." The bad news is that Monsanto greedheads have unleashed packs of their attack dog lawyers to sue several of these dairies, claiming that these no artificial hormones labels are, get this, false and misleading, because they might cause you and me to think that natural milk is better for us than milk with Monsanto's additive. In the first place, I do think that. But secondly, the dairies are not making any such health claim. They're merely informing us that the corporate additive is not in their milk. What's false or misleading about that? Nothing. But by simply filing these frivolous lawsuits, Monsanto can intimidate the dairies into changing their labels. It recently succeeded with this bullying tactic against Oakhurst Dairy in Maine. Monsanto was prepared to spend $250,000 or more just on lawyers to squeeze Oakhurst. How's a small dairy going to match that? After fighting for several months, Oakhurst has settled out of court, agreeing to alter its label. Even though Maine public opinion was solidly behind Oakhurst, and even though legal analysts say Monsanto's legal case was silly putty, this is Jim Hightower saying, Oakhurst is the third small dairy that this biotech Goliath's money has beaten down, and others are targeted. For the purity of our milk, marketplace, and judicial system, we consumers need to stand against the bully. Call the Organic Consumers Association, 218-226-4164.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, friends. Speaking from behind the good old working-class stainless steel microphone high up in the Green Mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont, Tom Hartman here with you. 8 minutes past the hour. TomFlacco.com. I'm an interesting guy. Kind of a blog, I suppose. He says, Senate 9/11 Commission offices have been deluged with phone calls, faxes, and emails from Americans and those from other countries who lost loved ones, demanding to have President Bush, National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice, Joint Chiefs Chairman Richard Myers, and other officials testify in public and under oath. You know, Condi Rice is on record as saying she doesn't have to do that. The Constitution doesn't require it. Citizens demanding to learn what the administration knew before the attacks and public explanations of curious actions are motivating these things. Media spokesman Alvin S. Felsenberg of the panel's office in Washington, D.C. said the commission is still talking about a presidential subpoena. They're talking about subpoenaing the White House. Here, astonishingly, ABC News and Dateline NBC reported that White House officials acknowledged that U.S. intelligence officials delivered a one-and-a-half-page document to President Bush on August 6, 2001. This is ABC News, reported on the 16th of May in 2002, and on NBC on the 10th of 10th of September, that, quote, warned that bin Laden's terrorist network might try to hijack American planes, end quote. Yet the commission has not brought this topic up in public hearings. Why not? These warnings came when top administration officials have been told to change their personal flight plans because of, quote, threats, end quote. CBS News on July 26th of 01 reported, and I quote, Attorney General John Ashcroft stopped flying commercial airlines and instead began traveling exclusively by leased jet aircraft instead of commercial airlines because of what the Justice Department called a threat assessment, end quote. Now, what was that threat assessment? Was that the same threat assessment that was shared just a week later with the president on his August 6th briefing? Quote, the Department of Justice refuses to make the details of that threat assessment public, end quote. And now Keene's panel has decided not to call Ashcroft to testify in a public forum. Newsweek on 9/24/01. 2 weeks after 9/11, Newsweek reported that the day before the World Trade Center and Pentagon attacks, quote, a group of top Pentagon officials suddenly canceled travel plans for the next morning, 9/11, apparently because of security concerns, end quote. Oh, I'm sorry, it continues. This from Newsweek. This incredible revelation has thus far yielded no official mention at Keene's hearings and no public testimony by the Pentagon officials who were luckier than the 9/11 victim. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm back to what's-his-name here, who were luckier than the 9/11 victims not privy to secret White House and military, quote, threat assessments. Missed a quotation mark in there. Anyway, the quote was, a group of top Pentagon officials suddenly canceled travel plans for the next morning, 9/11, apparently because of security concerns. That was reported Newsweek 9/24/01. And yet Bush and Vice President Cheney have agreed to meet with Keene and Hamilton, but they refuse to meet with anybody else. And you got citizens from all across the United States now calling up and saying, hey, wait a minute, we want to know what's going on. We would like to know what's going on. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to call and be on the air today. Roberta in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Roberta, welcome to Tom
Hartman. Good morning,
program.
Tom Hartman. I probably should have hung up. If you have to pay for these phone calls, I certainly thank you for this opportunity because I wanted to talk about Naomi Klein's connecting the dots most brilliantly. But I'm so glad to hear, first of all, the brilliance of your callers that called in this morning. One from the Midwest. It makes me proud to be from the Midwest, as I'm sure you are, too, and I hear the likes of him. Are you turned on to this worldwide 9/11 phone fax, this that you're just talking about now? These 23 questions are so cogent. I'm shocked myself. I did not realize that Bush knew about the first plane coming, the plane attack, before he even went to Florida. This is amazing. If we could get them to answer these questions.
Well, he knew that something was going to come down and that it was probably going to involve... Well, actually, we don't know what he knew, Roberta. That's the problem, because he won't testify.
But he knew something. But I wanted to mention, because I think when you don't realize that the Bush agenda, and I hate to put it all on one person who's just a front man, the Bush agenda is so much more dangerous than even Hitler's. It's because you don't have all the information. Naomi Klein, an award-winning journalist from Canada, connects the dots on the global scene more saliently than anyone.
I agree with you, Roberta. Naomi Klein does a great job. And I got to say that whenever you drop Hitler into the same conversation with George Bush, unless you want to deal with very specific, very narrow issues, it causes our listeners out there who might be on the fence to go, oh, no, it's a wacko. I mean, you know, let's not.
Okay, well, I can digress on that comparative issue myself.
I know, and I will one of these days, too. But you can't just drop it like a little bomb there, you know.
Okay, I understand.
Anyhow, to get to your point, because we've got
John McCain here for a minute.
Sure.
On this connecting the dots thing with Iraq. McCain says Iraq is a pot of honey, and it's attracting a lot of flies. So we really need to get a better fly swatter. It's not just the oil or the vendetta against, for the first Bush. And those were the first priorities. But it's the water, the phones, the roads, the media, the trains, the planes, the jails, and the police, anything that can be turned into a commodity and sold for profit. And the flies are Bechtel, Halliburton, MCI, ExxonMobil, Wackenhut, Time Warner, Walmart, Boeing, whatever you call it, News Corporation, and so on. I mean, they're doing it so fast and so desperately. It's so dangerous. And it's all a laboratory for the free market enterprise.
Yes, it's demonstrating the failure of it. And Roberta, you make an excellent point, and I appreciate your sharing it with us. And spot on. The flies are these big American corporations that are coming in and fueling the rage of Iraqis. Because the Iraqis are not being hired for these jobs. And perhaps, I mean, you can say from the point of view of the American companies doing business there, if they can bring in somebody from the Philippines whose loyalty, they're not, you know, they don't have to worry about, did this guy used to work for Saddam? I mean, you can understand that. But on the other hand, what are the American companies doing there in the first place? There are, you know, plenty of Iraqi businesses that can do an awful lot of this stuff that's being done. 1-866-889-8894. Dan in Albuquerque's on the line. Hey, Dan, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. Oop, gotta turn your volume up there. Here you go. Now you're on, Don. Dan.
Great. Michael Moore's getting ready to do Fahrenheit 9/11. I think you're going to see more of that come to the surface here this summer once his movie breaks.
Yeah.
In terms of all of that, you know, some of the hidden stuff, hidden agendas. But, you know, one thing that really frustrates me is how the media, in which is obviously corporate controlled, the media could sit there and echo how, you know, they're trying to blow this whole thing with Kerry making that statement out of proportion, which Joe Biden, if you watched him last night on Harbaugh, said it was very obvious which leaders don't want Bush in office. And the fact of the matter is they could sit there and they can echo that over and over again. But issues like Cheney being indicted in France for corporate corruption and some of these other issues that are very important to the American public.
Yeah, that's one that has not gotten much traction in the American press, is it? That our vice president has been indicted by one of our allies.
Exactly. And I, you know,
for bribery.
For bribery with Halliburton Industries.
Yeah.
You know, and what I don't understand is, I mean, obviously, something comes down from somewhere to dictate what's going to be said and what isn't going to be said on TV. And when they claim it's like a liberal bias on some of these mainstream networks, I disagree. I think that there's some stories that they pick and choose to report that aren't going to cause that much damage. And then there's other stories that they just neglect, which is a real true story that people would really like to hear.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was Eric Alterman wrote the book The Myth of the Liberal Media, and he just completely took apart Bernie Goldberg's book called Bias, you know, in which he claimed that there was this right-wing bias. The reality is that there actually are, you know, if you poll reporters, journalists, graduates of journalism school, graduates of college, you find more of them are Democrats than Republicans. But if you look at the news reporting, you find that the conservative viewpoint and the Republican viewpoint is far more often represented in the media than is the Democratic or the liberal viewpoint. It's just very straightforward.
Tom, are you going to be a participant in that Air America with Al Franken and these guys?
No, I'm not. I wish him well, but I'm not. No, we're doing this show on our own. Dan, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. 17 minutes after the hour, and Paul in Upland, California is on the line. Hey, Paul, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Tom. I'm just listening to you through a Shoutcast stream I just found about a few hours ago, and I'm so glad I did because I've been listening to NPR for a while, but, of course, I don't hear a program like this in Southern California, land of Der Gruppenführer, so
yeah.
I'm kind of stuck where I'm at.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I've been hearing a lot this morning of people talking about listening to Fox News, and there's a question that I have for you, and I don't know if anybody can really answer this. It's almost rhetorical, but is there a voice, is there power without money? Because it seems as though the reason why you don't have that much of a power from the left is because you have a lot of people from the right who control, obviously, media outlets. You've got a conglomerate controlling, 1,400 radio stations in the greater U.S.?
Yeah.
And you have no real way of controlling any of that happening because of the fact that you've got people in bed in the government who want to go ahead and see that this, this monopoly almost of the radio stations takes place.
Yeah.
And you don't have enough NPR stations to cover it, nor do they have the funding.
Well, and for that matter, I mean, you know, they're in many cases they're rolling over too. The reality, Paul, is that the concept upon which this country was founded was the idea that you could have political power without wealth. And I know people say, the founders, they were these rich white guys. But nonetheless, I mean, yes and no. There are no dynasties left over from that era. But that's the concept of democracy. And you know, we have been through a series of cycles in the United States, two major ones, really, since the founding of this country, where democracy became ascendant and then when corporatism became ascendant. And we're right now in the conservative cycle. But I think it's going to change. Thanks for the call. Thanks for the call, Paul. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Have you visited 100fires.com lately? If not, then you're missing out on thousands of books for a better world. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, creating more livable communities, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
A series of tax breaks for wealthy Americans and a ballooning military budget has the federal government running a record deficit. What to do? If you're Alan Greenspan, try cutting Social Security benefits. 3 years ago, the chairman of the Federal Reserve told Congress that tax cuts wouldn't endanger Social Security benefits. Fast forward to last week when the Fed chief asked Congress to reduce the cost of living increases in Social Security checks. Greenspan also proposed rolling back the retirement age to 67 years old.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Listen for the sound and listen for the noise. Listen for the thunder of the marching boys. A few years ago, their guns were only toys. Here comes the big parade. Don't be afraid. Price is paid. One more parade. So young, so strong, so ready for the war, so willing to go and die upon a foreign shore. All march together, everybody looks the same, so there's no one you can blame. Don't be ashamed, light the flame.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. And Paul in Upland, California, thanks for the call, by the way. You mentioned you were listening to us on Shoutcast. That's our it's coming via radiopower.org, our internet web station, or the radio station on the internet that carries this program. And you can find them, of course, at radiopower.org, and links to them from tomhartman.com. And thanks for listening on the web. Thanks for, you know, those folks who are there, those are listeners on Sirius Satellite, our listeners on radio stations from coast to coast. One of the Benedict at large in our chat room, in big letters, he says, Bush never in his life ever worked for a boss. And whereas somebody else points out that J. Kevin Jefferson did. And, yeah, well, actually, he did when he was young. Thomas Jefferson worked as a lawyer. Anyhow, here we're back to this 9/11 thing. I think this is fascinating. The Center for American Progress has put together a rather startling summary of this thing. You know, they point out the one-year anniversary of the invasion of Iraq is just, you know, right around the corner. By the way, one of the folks in our chat room, which you can get to at Tom, from tomhartman.com, a little earlier pointed out, and I have to track this down and make sure that this is right, but a couple of people say, yeah, this is the case, that it was on 9/11/1990, on September 11, 1990, that George Bush Sr. first publicly used the phrase New World Order. Now, isn't that an interesting... That's like, you know, the coincidence about Andrew Jackson's picture on the $20 bill being changed recently to look like John Kerry. Anyhow, the president... here we are, a year after the invasion, and the president appoints a so-called independent commission to look into the intelligence failure. The intelligence failure, right? As if it was a... Well, that's a whole other. Anyhow, however, instead of focusing on the false White House claims that Iraq had both weapons of mass destruction and operational ties to al-Qaeda, President Bush has directed the commission to look into an array of topics, including the CIA's judgment of weapon programs in Iran, Libya, North Korea. By doing this, by broadening the scope of the commission, he now has them working until 2005, well after the election. So we're not going to find out how these guys lied to us before the election. Bush has set that up. And then, you know, Time Magazine's Tim Berger lays this out. Who are the people on this commission? Well, here's a list. I'm quoting here from Time Magazine. Retired U.S. Appellate Court Judge Lawrence Silberman, the panel co-chair, is a Nixon-era friend of Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld and Vice President Dick Cheney's. Panel member Henry Rowan, a Hoover Institution scholar and former RAND Corporation president, worked under Cheney at the Pentagon during the first Gulf War. In September of 1990, with Cheney's backing, Rowan cooked up Operation Scorpion, a secret plan to invade Iraq from the west, go all the way to Baghdad, and topple Saddam. Another panel, former CIA Director William Studeman, now with Northrop Grumman, contributed to candidate Bush's campaign in 2000, and his wife contributed to the Bush campaign just a week before her husband was named to the panel. These are the people who are going to look into this intelligence failure. These are the folks who are going to be telling. You know, if I would love to hear from people who think I'm wrong, who think that I'm over the top, that 1-866-889-8894. It would be great to hear from somebody who thinks that this is, you know, how dare he say that? You know, please. But it's just mind-boggling to me, just absolutely mind-boggling. Tom Hartman here with you, 29 minutes past the hour. You're in the middle of a vast, radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. And stay tuned.
Tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A United Nations report on racism suggests Canada should pay reparations to Chinese migrant workers brought into the country between the late 19th and early 20th century. Canada charged a head tax on Chinese who arrived between 1885 and 1923. They each paid between $50 and $500 to be allowed in. The UN report suggests the government collected up to $23 million from the scheme, which it recommends be repaid. Canada's Minister for Multiculturalism has rejected the report.
The first ever labor contract for Walt Disney part-time workers will be put to a vote next week. The tentative deal was negotiated by the Service Trades Council, representing 6,100 part-time Disney workers, ranging from hotel employees to costume characters. The tentative agreement raises wages each year through 2007, bumping starting pay from $6.35 to $6.70 per hour, provides grievance procedures, allows workers greater job flexibility, and recognizes seniority rights. However, the pay raise still leaves some workers under the federal poverty level.
Being a journalist in Iraq just got a lot tougher. This month, the U.S. Occupying Authority implemented a requirement that all journalists working in Iraq be registered by and accredited with the military. A crew with the Korea Broadcasting System found out about the new rules the hard way last week when they were detained by U.S. troops and held for several hours, even after the Korean consulate vouched for their professional status. The International Federation of Journalists accuses the U.S. of attempting to intimidate and control journalists in Iraq, which hampers their ability to learn an accurate picture about the occupation and reconstruction effort. No comment from the U.S. military.
Popcorn lung is now a disease officially recognized by the courts. 32-year-old Eric Peoples contracted lung disease after working in a Missouri microwave popcorn factory for only a year and a half. People sued, claiming artificial butter flavoring was to blame for his illness, and this week a Missouri jury agreed, awarding him $18 million. International Flavors and Fragrances Incorporated says its products pose no danger to popcorn consumers, though the company now issues respirators to its employees.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Of all the workers in the federal government, which have the most dangerous jobs? If you use OSHA injury rates as your yardstick, the answer would have to be airport screeners with the Transportation Security Administration. Last year, 19.4% of all screeners suffered some sort of mishap at the airport. Most common were strained muscles from lifting baggage. That on-the-job injury rate is more than three times the average for the entire federal workforce.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Exposing the con and conservative. Tom Hartman here with you. 26 minutes before the hour. Baghdad, Iraq. A tragic story. This is, you know, what hath George wrought? A huge car bomb destroyed a five-story hotel in central Baghdad, killing at least 27 people and wounding 41 others. Army Colonel Ralph Baker of the 1st Armored Division said rescuers are still searching for victims in the Jabal Lebanon Hotel. This is the hotel that backs up, by the way, to that circle where they toppled, where the tank toppled the statue of Saddam while Shalabi's little guys, his little band stood around and applauded. He said foreigners were among the guests. Local resident Falek Khalim said Americans, Britons, Egyptians, as well as other foreigners were staying at the hotel. This story is going to get a lot bigger, I'm sure. A true tragedy. And our prayers and well wishes are with the dead, the injured, and their families. Not only did, and here, it comes back around. Ahmed Chalabi. This is absolutely incredible. This guy, not only did Iraqi exile and convicted bank swindler Ahmed Chalabi feed misinformation about Iraq and weapons of mass destruction to the United States government, but he and his group also gave, quote, exaggerated and fabricated intelligence to leading newspapers, news agencies, and magazines in the United States, Britain, and Australia, end quote. Not only did he lie to the government, Chalabi, not only did he tell, you could say, okay, Dick Cheney was saying, hey, Chalabi, feed us some stuff here. We want to give us some goodies. He says, okay, here you go. But he actually went out and fed it to the press, and what's perhaps even worse, in more than 108 news stories that carried out-and-out distortions, fabrications, and lies by Chalabi and his buddies. Published in the New York Times, particularly by Judith Miller, the Washington Post, the Associated Press, that we, our press, our media, just took it hook, line, and sinker and said, thank you very much. And this, this has been well documented now. Here are some of the things. This is, here's a list. This is from an article by Knight Ritter Newspapers, authored by Jonathan Linde and Tish Wells. Iraqi exile group fed news media false information. here are some of the they call them assertions that haven't been substantiated. It's a very kind way of saying it. Let me just read these to you. Saddam collaborated, number one, they said that Saddam collaborated for years with bin Laden and was complicit in 9/11 terrorist attacks. Intelligence officials, however, say there is no evidence of operational ties between Iraq and al-Qaeda and no evidence of an Iraqi hand in the attacks. Why did Chalabi say that? He said, he told our newspapers, and they published it, and he told our government, and they apparently relied on it, that Iraq trained Islamic extremists in the same hijacking techniques used in the 9/11 strikes and prepared them for operations against Iraq's neighbors and possibly the United States. But, note Linde and Wells, two senior U.S. officials say that so far no evidence has been found to substantiate the charge. Chalabi and his buddies say that Iraq had mobile biological warfare facilities designed as yogurt and milk trucks and hid banned weapons production and storage facilities beneath the hospital, faked lead-lined wells, and Saddam's palaces. Well, we have had the time now to check them out. Lies all. They didn't just say this was a maybe. They didn't just say, you know, we think that. They said, you can take this to the bank. It's one of the reasons why if Chalabi ever shows up in Jordan, he gets arrested because he's under indictment there for bank fraud. Iraq, he said, Chalabi and his associates, they said that Iraq held 80 Kuwaitis captured in the Gulf War in 1991 in a secret underground prison. Sorry, no secret underground prison, no prisoners. They said that Iraq could launch toxin-armed Scud missiles at Israel that could kill 100,000 people and was aggressively developing nuclear weapons. Sorry, no Scud missiles, no nukes. One of Chalabi's buddies, an engineer, Adnan Izhan El-Haderi, claimed in a December 20th, 2001 New York Times article by Judith Miller that there were biological, nuclear, and chemical warfare facilities under private villas under the Saddam Hussein Hospital and in fake water wells around Baghdad. Wasn't true. Try to call Judith Miller at the New York Times and ask her about it. Several requests to the New York Times to speak to Miller were not answered. However, what is true is that the Iraqi National Congress, which is Chalabi's organization, this is the group that fed this stuff to us, that got us into this war, was paid $18 million between 1999 and 2003. $18 million. To plant 108 news stories with media around the world, and to feed this information to our intelligence services. And it turns out it even went beyond that. This once again from this Knight Ritter article, the information bypassed U.S. intelligence channels and reached the recipients, that being people like Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld. Even after the CIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, and FBI officers questioned the accuracy of the materials or the motives of those who supplied them. Now, you would think that an administration with any intelligence at all, you know, would say, hey, we gave these guys $18 million. They lied through their teeth to us. We believed them, and we went to war, and we have lost 560 of our soldiers. We've had to medically evacuate over 10,000 of our soldiers from Iraq. Thousands of our young men and women are now missing arms and legs and eyes and ears. And somewhere between 10 and 30,000, perhaps as many as 50,000 Iraqi civilians got in the way and died. And all of this, at this point, you would think that we would say, listen, you guys, we're not going to give you any more money. At the very least, I mean, don't you think? No more money? Well, despite all this, the New York Times reports, the Pentagon is still paying every month, your tax dollars, that money they deduct from your paycheck, via the Pentagon, every month, $340,000 to Shalabi and his buddies. $750,000 every month. We're still paying this guy. There are moments, you know, usually you can figure it out. You know, you say, okay, it's no bid contracts for Halliburton. Yes, there were other contractors who could have done the job. They tried to float that story that, you know, Halliburton was the only one that could have done it. Turned out it was a lie. It got exposed in the media. Most Republicans probably don't realize that, but you know, it was, and it was there, and it was on it wasn't on Faux News, but it was on CNN and the network news, and they're kind of campaign contributors. I mean, you know, and Dick Cheney's got hundreds of thousands of stock options on Halliburton. So the more Halliburton becomes worth, the more Dick Cheney becomes worth. And so you can say, well, you know, you can understand what they're up to at least. But this, I don't understand this. I mean, this goes beyond even rational theft. I mean, there's a certain logic to corruption. But at some point, as a government, don't you say, hey, wait a minute? Enough already? And speaking of bizarre goings on in the government having to do with money, we now discover that Richard Foster, the chief actuary at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, says that he knew that the Medicare bill was going to cost $100 million more than what the administration was saying. And now this is, what's interesting is, this is the one that's got the Republicans all tied up in knots. The Republicans are really upset about this. That George Bush lied to them. And that he instructed this, his former boss, Thomas Scully, ordered him this. Reading from the story in the Miami Herald, actually picked up from the Washington Post, a story by Tony Pugh. His former boss, Thomas Scully, ordered him to withhold his estimates because they exceeded what Congress seemed to be willing to accept by more than $100 million. Approving the version were 13 Republican fiscal conservatives who said they would vote against it if it cost more than $400 billion over the first 10 years. And the question now is, did the president know? Did Tommy Thompson know? Where did the lie stop on this one? So now the Democrats are saying, some of the conservative Republicans are saying, we need to re-vote on this thing. I mean, we got a Medicare bill here that they are running ads on television with your and my tax dollars that lie about it. And the networks pulled those ads for a little bit and then put them back on. And now, you know, to kind of get below the radar, they're making mostly local cable buys with these things, but they're still running these ads. Isn't this the same Medicare? Yes, it's the same Medicare you always had. But can I get discounts? Yes, you can get discounts. Everything is fine. Oh, yes, everything is fine. No, everything is not fine. Sorry. This is the beginning of the dismantling of Medicare, the privatization of it, and it's a multi-hundred-billion-dollar gift to the pharmaceutical industry and the for-profit hospital industry, Bill Frist's buddies, and the contributors to George Bush. So here Tom Daschle now has called for reopening the vote on the drug benefit. He also called for an investigation into the firing threat and assertions that the administration had withheld its cost estimates from Congress. Whether this is criminal or not is a matter we will certainly want to clarify, Tom Daschle said. But if not criminal, it was certainly unethical, and I think we need to know the facts. And I agree. Speaking of the facts, the soldiers in Iraq are now starting to be a little concerned about this. Now, you know, if it was just one guy. This is a guy, Camilo Mejia, M-E-J-I-A, Mejia. I'm not sure how he pronounces it. He says, I am saying no to war. I have chosen peace. He turned himself in yesterday at Hanscom Air Force Base in Massachusetts. He said, I went to Iraq and was an instrument of violence, and now I have decided I want to become an instrument of peace. He said that the sight of dying Iraqis has pushed his principles to the limit. He said, and when you find justification for it, all you find is lies. All you find is that this thing about weapons of mass destruction, which we never found. Sergeant Mejia's feelings against the war hardened when he was ordered to fire on Iraqi protesters that he did not consider a threat. He told the Chicago Tribune, and I quote, it was the first time I had fired at a human being. I guess you could say it was my initiation in killing. He says, by conscience, I cannot continue to do the things I was doing in Iraq. Well, that story, dated 17 March here in the news.com.au, an Australian paper. The Associated Press, an article by Paul Garwood. It's spreading. Two U.S. Army medics in Iraq have applied for conscientious objector status and want to be honorably discharged from the military because the idea of killing is, quote, revolting, end quote, to them, their company commander said Tuesday. They're not identifying these two guys. One's from California, one's from Illinois. And, you know, they got over there and they saw the situation and they said, no, this isn't what we signed up for. You know, give us a just war. Yeah, we'll fight World War II. We'll go up against the Nazis. But we're, you know, to defend Halliburton? Give me a break. This is the Tom Hartman radio program. 10 minutes before the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
I can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Peer pressure often leads outdoor expeditions into risky situations. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. You're out on a wilderness hike and you begin to feel fatigued, but you don't say anything to your companions because you don't want to seem weak or be the one to end the expedition. That's a common situation, according to Lawrence Gonzalez, the author of Deep Survival, Who Lives, Who Dies, and Why. Gonzalez says peer pressure, real or imagined, often keeps people from speaking up during outdoor recreation activities. He says the stronger hikers or climbers in a group should watch for signs of trouble among their companions.
You really have to look out for and pace yourself to the least capable member of the group. If you have a beginner going out with experts, the experts are going to have to wait, and people often get into trouble, you know, where they don't want to be the one to say, hey, I can't go any faster, will you please slow down? And then they do something dumb like separate the group or just work too hard and exhaust themselves.
Gonzalez says mismatches between abilities can lead to friction, frustration, and poor decision-making. He says you should make sure you're all on the same page before signing up for a group expedition.
There is a type that psychologists refer to as impulsive sensation seekers. And those are the people who you want to be careful about because they're going to take way more risk than is advisable and probably get you hurt as well as themselves. You need to know what type you are, and especially if you're going out with others, match your abilities with theirs.
Gonzalez says there's no shame in recognizing your limitations. He says it's one of the keys to having a safe and rewarding wilderness experience. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman with you. Truth and common sense in broadcasting. For a change. Yes, indeed. For a change, my friends. Louise just passed this along to me. Wonder how Bill O'Reilly will handle this. Bill being the big investor in Mel Gibson's movie and clearly, you know, helping hype the thing for almost a year, I'd say. And now Mel Gibson... Here, Mel Gibson has become the latest in a line of celebrities to question the Iraq War. The usually conservative movie star director said he has been having doubts about President George Bush. Mel Gibson, it all has to do with these weapons of mass destruction that we can't seem to find. And why did we go over there? Oh, come on, Mel. Yeah, I mean, you want to know why we went over there? All you have to—it's very simple. Go to there's links off. Actually, we've had discussions about it on our message board. You can go to TomHartmann.com and link to the message board, or you can just go right to JudicialWatch.org. Larry Klayman's a nice conservative right-wing organization. You'd feel right at home. And look at the lawsuit, the papers that came out of the lawsuit against Dick Cheney over the energy policy. And you'll see that in April of 2001, these now declassified papers, in April of 2001, these guys were sitting around carving up the oil fields of Iraq. You can't have a country that relies on external sources for 50% of its energy supply, and that energy supply literally is keeping us alive because we produce our food with oil. Our pesticides, our fertilizers, and all of our machinery is run by oil. And the pesticides and fertilizers are made out of oil in large part, many of them, certainly the chemicals. And you just can't do it. I mean, eventually you got to get control of your oil supplies or you got to do something else. And they didn't want to do something else. And so it was, we got to nail down 10% of the world's oil in Iraq. This is not rocket science. Thanks so much to Louise today for producing a great show. Thanks to Brad Walrod in New York for editing and compiling our music. Shelby and RadioPower.org for streaming us on the web. Thanks to our sponsors. Please patronize them. And thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Thanks to you for listening. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place. This is Tom Hartmann. I'll see you then.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartmann Program. Check our website at www.tomhartmann.com for archives of this program and more information.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Layoffs usually focus on those who go unemployed, but those left behind also pay a price in their health. Analysis of the Finnish workforce by researchers at the University of Helsinki, published in the British Medical Journal, found that when a company downsized staff by 18% or more, it sparked a significant rise in the number of sick days taken by surviving employees. The main culprit? Stress from a heightened workload and the loss of workplace colleagues.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost it.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartmann Program.